This is Tom Bernard. Can't get enough of sports talk with Phil Mackey and Judd Zolgad? Tune in to the new Tom Bernard Show podcast Monday through Friday as Phil and Judd join me to discuss the latest sports headlines and whatever else comes to mind.
Just download the Tom Bernard Show app wherever you get your podcasts or visit TomBernardShow.com. It's another way to get more from me and Judd talking sports and having fun with Tom, and it's all at your fingertips. Download the Tom Bernard Show app now and join the conversation.
A couple of armchair GMs who have yet to be wrong with any of their Timberwolves takes. Right. It's Flagrant Howls with Phil Mackey and Kyle Tighe.
All right, I'm doing some math here, Kyle. The Timberwolves are 50 games in. They have 32 games remaining. For them to win 50 games, which was the stated goal at the beginning of the season on this podcast, that we would like the Wolves to win 50 games for the first time in almost 20 years. They would have to finish 25-7, right? Is my math right on that?
No, that's right. So what you're saying is technically possible.
25-7.
That would put.
Should we go game
30.
By game through the schedule and see what
are
the
quarter by
losses?
Quarter and be like, okay, well they're going to lose that third quarter and they're definitely going to lose that third quarter.
A bunch of home games in a row here, and well, ordinarily Sacramento on your schedule would be like, all right, but Sacramento is one of the best teams in the West so far this year. But yeah, it's doable.
I mean, just because you brought it up, the schedule. No one likes talking about the schedule and standings more than you and I. They are only 3.5 games back, despite all the chaos. I mean, again, I say this every week. This is just the most chaotic, pseudo-disappointing season in a long time. But it's the same for like a dozen teams in the West, and there's only 15 of them.
It is.
But yeah, the Wolves, we're doing this on a Friday. They host the Grizzlies tonight. Then they host a couple Kings. I think they have a 6-game homestand that kicks off tonight. And it's very road heavy. But yeah, I mean, they're 1.5 games back of the 4 seed, which would give them home court advantage. They are 1.5 games out of the 13th seed, which would get people fired. Like, it's a crazy. these next 32 games are pretty much, I would say, I've tried to be patient. You and I have said small sample size enough that it has caused people to drink, but now every game is a must-win game. Like, every game now, because their schedule is not, no more Pistons, no more Rockets. Their schedule is all teams that if you beat them, they come down and you move up. So that's, every game now from here on out is going to be really important. And hopefully they get some, you know, reserves back. But yeah, the schedule and the standings are so much fun every day because it's just changing.
Yeah, Ant kind of called his shot on ESPN's afternoon NBA show. Is it what's that show called? NBA Today, I think.
It's actually pretty good. Yeah,
with Malika Andrews, and yeah, it's a good show. It's not inside the NBA on TNT where they were playing the peanut butter tic tac toe ping pong ball game last night. But
that show's awesome.
It is. Ant called his shot and said he was going to posterize someone in tonight's game against the Grizzlies. But what would so they're 25-25, like you said. They're coming off one of the 5 most impressive performances and efforts, I would say.
Yep.
Well, but the Pelicans were without Zion. Okay, but the Wolves were without Cat. So it's two teams that are sort of scrapping for position in the Western Conference. They go in, they win that game. What has to happen from now until the end of the season, postseason included, for you to feel like, okay, they kind of redeemed themselves after a weird first, 40 or 50 games. What leaves a good taste in Kyle's basketball mouth here the rest of the way?
Well, you put me in a spot that people aren't going to love this, but I would say just a good first round playoff matchup. Like, again, they have to they have to get through the play-in or just, again, move up in the standings well enough that you're fighting in another playoff series. The first time they've been in back-to-back playoff series, I think, since Kevin Garnett was here. So, like, in 2 decades. I know that sounds like I'm dumbing down the expectations, but, just context matters. I was looking at All-NBA guys last year. So, All-NBA, there's 3 teams. It basically says these are the 15 best players from that season. Karl-Anthony Towns was one of them. He's missed 29 games. The next closest, I think, is Chris Paul with 21, Devin Booker with 20, and then it drops off to, like, 8. So you gotta, that matters, man. Like, when your best player on paper has missed more than half the season. So expectations for the rest of the year is like, they don't have any layups on their schedule, which is great because they are terrible at layup games. They just lose them all, Pistons, Rockets, whatever. But they finish strong, get a first round playoff series, push it to 6. And then maybe get to the second round. But then this is all kind of building. Like, okay, we did the Rudy thing. If you make the first round of the playoffs, by the way, you're going to give up a pick that's in the 20s. So it's not like we have to worry about that. And then you're like, okay, back-to-back playoff years, Rudy worked, Ant took a leap, Jaden, whatever, figure out the point guard, figure out Carl's fit, and then next year you kind of build off that. I know it's an all-in move, Phil, so people think all-in, it's got to be a title. It's like, no, I don't think so yet, but you do have to. If you don't survive the play-in tournament, or God forbid, don't make the play-in tournament, it's an absolute disaster. Absolute disaster.
You know, I'm going to – yeah, I think – the way the West is so scrunched right now, and the fact that you're not guaranteed anything right now. However, you get to the first round of the playoffs, it would be disappointing if they had to fight through the play-in round again, just based on all the moves they made and the trade they made for Rudy. But I think my goal is still pretty similar. Like, they're not going to win the 55 games that I predicted, I think, at the beginning of the season on the show. What would that math be? So 25-7, they'd have to go 27-2?
Go, you said 55 wins? They'd have to go 30-2.
On this show, I said 30-2. Math. Forget me right now.
Good Friday math. No, yeah, 30-2 is still possible.
30-2? Well, maybe they can afford to drop one of these games against the Kings on the back-to-back at home. But
that's it. No more losses in February, March, or April.
But I think, you know, they have to make a run at some point to validate the Gobert trade. And by make a run, for sure win a first round. Can you get to the second round of the playoffs for the first time since 2003-2004? They've only been to the playoffs twice since 2003-2004. So... If at the end of the day, maybe you oddly take a step back in record, because even getting to 46 wins would be tough. Maybe you take a step back in record in the regular season, but maybe you're the sixth seed going into the playoffs and you wind up facing the Sacramento Kings in the first round and you beat them in a 6 or 7 game series, you get to the second round of the playoffs.
Yep.
I would say, despite the turbulence and everything that went into trying to figure out this whole Rudy thing, I would call that a win.
Yep.
Is that fair?
Yeah, I don't think you're lowering expectations. I looked this up last year. I think throughout the 50-game mark, or about the 48 to 50-game mark last season, like, the 3 seed in the West had, like, 30 wins. And right now the 3 seed in the West is 27-20. It's just it's more about where they finish in the standings. Obviously, that translates to the playoffs, and not about the wins, because this is such a weird year where – everyone in the middle from 3 to 13 is all kind of jumbled up. So I'm not going to be like, oh, they only won X games. I'm far more concerned with where they finished in the standings, because you could finish as the 5 seed with like 45 wins maybe.
Yeah.
And you would be like, well, they didn't hit their over that Vegas predicted. But it's like, yeah, but they were the 5 seed. Like, I don't know. Like, in July 3rd when Gobert was announced, if you said, hey, they're going to be the 5 seed, I would have probably been pretty excited, because for this year, that's a good result. I think that this is a multi-year investment, multi-year experiment, whatever you want to call it. So the next year, it's like, okay, well, you've done playoffs now, back-to-back years. Next year, you got to make the conference semifinals or whatever. So it's still all building, but I mean, they're in it, right? Like 50 games, 25-25.
They've treaded water.
It could be worse. It would lovely be better, right? It'd be way more fun if they were 3 wins better, because 28-22 would have them literally as the 3 seed. But they're not 23-26. That matters. So,
and when they were sitting after that, the first loss to Detroit, when they lost at home on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, the players only meeting.
Yep, that was the players only meeting. It dropped them to 16-21 at the time. And then they went on a roll, and they've actually been one of the best, record-wise, they've actually been one of the best teams in the NBA since the first of the year. They've only lost 4 games. They're 9-4 since the first of the year. So they've kind of figured something out here. At that point, 16-21, and you and I had a couple episodes around that time after we got back from our break, it was like, what is happening? Are you going to have to – because let's say you lose a couple more, because the next team on their schedule was Denver and then Portland with Dame Lillard, and they won those games. But it's like, my God, how much further can this thing sink before you have to like start making panic moves? They've, to me, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, or I guess the last month, because we're almost to the end of January, they have eliminated my panicked, oh my God, this is a total disaster. They're 5 games under .500. What is happening? that feeling has gone away for me.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm kind of back in, okay. Let's continue to stockpile games and see what happens here. At some point, they're going to add Carl Anthony Towns back in the mix. So I've moved off of that feeling from a month ago. But if they lose five straight games again at some point, and they fall like well below 500, and now they're the 12 seed with like 20 games to go, I reserve the right to start freaking out again.
Absolutely. And that's when we'll sharpen our pitchforks again. But it is a really interesting situation. Again, 25 and 25, currently eighth in the West. I mean, I'm not comped by the sales staff of the Wolves, but like I would say that today is like a plant your flag moment where it's like, okay, these final 32 games, the easiest game on the schedule over the rest of the season is like maybe the Magic, and they're not a pushover at all. Like they're kind of like frisky one good week away from the plan as well for a rebuilding team. So yeah, if they go lose four or five straight, just like any other team in the West, you can fall completely off the playoff play-in picture. And if you go win four or five straight, you can put yourself in a situation where you're the three seed. So, I mean, the Pelicans at some point when we did our NBA standings were, I believe, the top team in the West at some point. They've lost six in a row. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be really, truly, no more small sample size, no more ifs, ands, or buts. Like, these next 32 games are going to be a playoff atmosphere, whether it be at home or on the road. And it's going to be awesome to watch. And again, my bar is so low for this franchise because it's kind of a dumpster fire historically. I don't usually remember getting to watch meaningful basketball games in February. Like last year was one of the first times. So I'm going to tune in tonight. I'm excited to watch it. And it's just going to be really good basketball, you hope.
I care way more about just competing and doing something in the playoffs than I do about regular season win totals, especially this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think setting a goal of 50 wins was kind of it would be a real, you're going to make that trade, you better take a step forward in regular season wins. But in the absence of that, I think winning a first round playoff series, just to answer my own question, would be the win here. And I'm looking at these teams right now, and they're going to play Memphis tonight, but none of these teams look insurmountable. Like I would rather not have to play the Warriors in a playoff series, but just based on the fact that those two teams are tied in the standings right now, it's unlikely they would even match up in the first round. But like the teams that you could potentially play in the first round if you made it there through the play-in, let's say you have to face the Nuggets. Well, you've already beat them once, played them tough. Like the Nuggets I think are better and more gelled than the Timberwolves, but I don't see the Nuggets as a team that you'd be screwed in a seven game series against. Memphis, the Wolves should have won that series last year. Now, Memphis has taken some steps. I mean, Ja Morant is ridiculous, but I'd be curious to see Rudy Gobert as sort of an equalizer, grabbing rebounds and altering shots, making sure Ja Morant can't just get to the rack on a regular basis, right? Like, and we'll see a sample of that tonight. If you face the Sacramento Kings or the Pelicans in the first round of the playoffs, even the Clippers, dude, like, the Clippers are a theory.
The Clippers are a theory. Don't get me started.
What if they can just put everyone together? They don't. When's the last time those guys were all just healthy and gelling and playing together? They, between load management and injuries and age, now would they be favored in a series against the Wolves? Yes, I'm sure they would be. But it's kind of an interesting West in that if you can just, like, let's say you win the same amount or fewer games, all right, whatever, go beat the Nuggets in a first-round playoff series. Go beat the Clippers in a first-round playoff series.
You're the first one that has really that take. I am so appreciative of you because one thing I've always thought, and it ties into the Gobert trade, this season has been extra miserable. And I actually think Tim Connelly's a good guy and probably going to do some good stuff here, but it's more miserable because of the price he paid for Gobert. Because we just did it with the Wiggins trade. We just have to sit here and every time they lose, we have to be like, oh my God, we might have to give up the first overall pick.
Yeah.
So, and like that pick that hangs over your head sucks. It sucks as a fan. It sucks to cover the team because it's like, I don't want to be embarrassed again. But my thought's always been if they did make the playoffs, not the play-in, but like they're one of the eight teams in a series, I'm not even saying this because I like them. Like, I wonder if they would be kind of dangerous because you've now clinched that like you're not giving
Anthony
up a lottery
Edwards,
pick.
Dude. Yes.
Like you're going to give up, you know, again, when the Gobert trade was made, you knew you were going to give up picks, but you're like, well, if they're in the 20s, the hit rate on that is fairly low. Yeah, Jaden McDaniels was 28, but Balmero was also in the 20s, and he's, like, I don't know, maybe in Shanghai. So look at some of the, like, the Denver Nuggets could win 60 games this year, and it's like, the Wolves feel confident against them. And who has the pressure? And I know we think as fans or that's covering this team that the Wolves have the pressure. The pressure on in that series is on the Nuggets because you've had a back-to-back-to-back MVP who can't get out of the first round or the second round. The Grizzlies, all the pressure's on them. They're the ones that just dance every other night on TV. The Kings, they don't want to have their, you know, chariot turned back into a pumpkin. Like, oh, we finally made the playoffs and we lost to the Timberwolves.
I think if the Wolves and Kings met in the playoffs, there would be no pressure on anyone whatsoever.
No, everyone would
just
be happy.
Like a celebration of two teams that used to be relevant 20 years ago that are now facing each other.
We'd all stream the game at Golden Corral and just be super hyped. But the Clippers, you made that point. They're an experiment. They have a lot of pressure on them, too. They paid a heavy price to get all those guys, and they've never done anything. The Mavericks, if they get bounced in the first round, there's going to be Luka talk. The Suns, this might be the last Chris Paul year. The Warriors, this might be the last Draymond Green year. There's a lot of teams that I think if Minnesota can just get to the playoffs and say, okay, yeah, we're giving up the 19th pick, the 20th pick, and we'll worry about future picks in the future, I do think they're kind of a dangerous team because back to my All-NBA stuff, of the 15 best players last year, no player has missed more games than Karl-Anthony Towns. His fit was weird, all that stuff, but they have a new Anthony Edwards. They have a new Kyle Anderson. D'Angelo Russell hasn't really played this well in his entire Timberwolves tenure. So you might just be plugging in a guy that's like, all right, expectations are low. We're just going to try to mess up your season, mess up your playoff run. And that's how I would be. That's how I would do it if I was Chris Finch in the locker room.
I have a D'Lo question I want to ask. Our weekly or episodic D'Lo question I want to ask you in a second. But, you know, we get so caught up, rightfully so, in the day-to-day weeds of this team and what the local expectations are and the fan base expectations are. And to acknowledge that for a second, when you make a trade like they did, you bring heightened expectations on yourself, for sure among the ticket holders and just the local stakeholders. And they have not, to this point, come close to meeting those expectations through 50 games.
Correct.
It's fair to point that out.
Absolutely.
If you zoom out to 30,000 feet, more of like an NBA worldview, or if I were to have maybe just like plopped you down, maybe you've been out to lunch the last like 6 to 9 months or something, and you're just emerging into the NBA world, and I were to say, hey, the Timberwolves, who up until a couple years ago only went to the playoffs once between 2004 and 2020, are on the verge of going to the playoffs for a second consecutive season with a young superstar, Anthony Edwards, who may still be an all-star. He's taking the third-year leap in front of our eyes. They've got a team that can pretty much make noise against any of the seeds that might be higher than them. What do you think? I'd say, okay. So wait, back-to-back playoffs for the first time in almost 20 years? So I think, again, they have not lived up to what we thought. They deserve criticism for not being able to gel. There's things that still need to be ironed out. But this thing, I think a lot of people kind of wrote this thing off when they were 16 and 21 as, oh, my God, what a buffoon, Tim Connelly, fire this, you know, do that. I would just say, let it play out. Mm-hmm. Let's let the final 30-plus games of the regular season play out. Let's see if they can punch up against whoever they play in the playoffs. And let's just see where this thing lands and how it feels sometime in the middle of May. That's where I'm at with this.
Yeah. This has been disappointing. Like, I don't ever want to sugarcoat that. I expected them to have more wins than they do at this point. But I also expected, like, Carl to just play. And again, I know the fit was weird, but I think that was a segment of time that's not, when he gets acclimated back, it's not going to look the same, and maybe they stagger them just completely or whatever. But I think the Wolves right now are like 11th in defense in the league. Like, there's been some good things, and more than anything, again, they've treaded water. It would have been nice to have been better. It would have been nice to get a couple of those Pistons Rockets wins and inflate your record. But I don't know, man, just from a sports angle, I don't know if they beat the Pelicans if they lose to the Rockets. That stuff's real. Like, you got embarrassed by the worst team in the Western Conference. Maybe that's what motivated you to go crush the Pelicans. So they've done just enough. That would be, let's get a chant going. They've done just enough to kind of tread water. But now moving forward, it's going to be every night matters. And if we've learned anything from this wild team, it's that they don't care about teams below them. And it sucks. But they do care about teams above them. Yeah. And maybe that's what they need, because everyone that they're about to play over the next 2.5 months is like technically like above them, and they have a real opportunity here. But as we say every week, let's see what happens.
Yeah. It's time now for a new segment we're going to unveil. You haven't been part of these production meetings with my brain here. All right. This is called Anthony Edwards Stat Porn on Flagrant Howls. So, over the last three games, 44, 31, and 37. If you go back 2 months, 30 games for Anthony Edwards since Carl Anthony Towns went down and the Wolves needed Point Ant, Alpha Ant, to step up to the table. 26 points per game, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, a block, 46% shooting, 38% from 3, and 80% free throws. Talk dirty to me.
I got one more for you. This is from the lead SM on Twitter. I don't really know who they are, but I saw it in my feed. Since December 18th, Anthony Edwards has more games scoring 37 or more points than games scoring under 20 points.
Yeah, hit me with that stat porn. Yeah.
So in 2 months, he's had more 37 or better games than under 20 games. He is a scoring freak. He's grabbing more rebounds. He's becoming a facilitator. He's still giving you lame defensive performances against the Rockets when Jalen Green goes off, but he's also giving you just really good stuff in that Pelicans game. Obviously, there was other guys that came to the party as well, D'Lo, Jaden, and Steph, and Rudy, but this is it. I mean, this is not what was in November. He definitely started the season slow. I don't know, man. You're going to get me. I know it, but maybe that's why he's not getting the All-Star respect, but when I look at the All-Star standings or the people projecting all that stuff, I don't know. I mean, the thing that matters to me this season more than anything, and it ties into load management, it ties into a variety of other tangents and yelling at clouds. They're 25 and 25. That's 50. You can check the math, I think. Zero games missed.
Yeah.
Zero games missed. That is all I want from my young superstar player. Is he available? Is he gutting it through injuries? Is he gutting it through stuff? He has played in every game. I said this last week, but the first game I ever went to with my dad, I was like 10 or 11. It was the year Kevin Garnett played all 82 games. And seeing him is the whole reason I'm a fan. I cover the team. I'm talking to you today. It's like he hooked me on the NBA. And because that dude came every night, back-to-backs, cold weather, whatever, he played and Ant plays. And I think that's why when you talk about All-Star stuff, he gets so much more consideration in my little tiny brain than Kawhi Leonard, who has also... his team's played 50 games, and he's missed 25 of them.
Yeah, also, okay, the Kawhi thing, good
God. You're going to get me. You're going to get me.
I'm sorry, is Kawhi, he's not a starter, is he? He can vote at the starter?
No, he's not a starter.
But he's on the reserve.
The reserves get announced next Thursday, so that's when the coaches kind of vote on that. So there's, I think, 7 guys to add to the 5 that were voted in by the fans.
Yeah.
But yeah, so next week we'll know the other 7. And there's, you know, some significant reasons why I think Ant should make it, and it would help him if he did. And contract clauses.
Why don't you go ahead and we don't report very often on the show here, but Kyle's going to put his capital J journalism hat on.
No, so this is actually credit to Score North because they sent me to Vegas for preseason, and when I was there, just heard some stuff. And my weekly credit to Dane because Dane Moore helped me kind of confirm this, but yeah, there's just these guys have shoe contracts. And Ant has one with Adidas. And in his contract, there's a clause that if he makes an All-Star team, it would just trigger the beginning of a design for his own shoe. So, like, Damian Lillard has his own shoe. I think, like, Zach LaVine with maybe, like, New Balance has his own shoe. Obviously, LeBron, Giannis. Like, I'm not talking about just, like, a custom color. He would have, like, I guess, Ant ones. And I think that's a really cool thing if you're a sneakerhead, which I kind of am, but also too, if 21-year-old Anthony Edwards had already starred in a major Netflix movie and then also had his own shoe, I think that stuff is really important for the market and the team. Like, I don't know, man, when's the last time a Minneapolis athlete had their own like shoe or something? That stuff is what puts you on the map. I mean, for Damian Lillard being out in Portland,
Kevin Love have a shoe? Did Kevin Love have a shoe? He didn't have a shoe.
No, he had
Rubio.
Kevin Love had gloves for his push-ups, but Rubio didn't have a shoe. But I think this is dating me a little bit, but I think Kevin Garnett might have had his own kind of custom shoe. But that stuff is a big deal. And again, just kind of little reporting behind the scenes. But yeah, it would be really big for him to get that. Again, he's not complaining. This was just something I had written down in my notes from September. But It would be cool for him. It would be a big moment for this team. You know, LaMelo Ball and his dad have his own shoe, and LaMelo, I don't think, is on the same tier as Ant. But for Ant to have his own shoe and be an all-star and be able to showcase his skills on that national stage, I think would bring some respect to this yes. organization. And there's certain levels they don't deserve respect. They did overpay for Gobert. They have, you know, missed on the Curry picks and the David Kahn stuff. But to have kind of a homegrown all-star that gets his own shoe and gets that stuff would be really cool. And it's why I hate the all-star game. But if I have to talk about it, if I have to know that it has incentives that are big for this guy. And the thing that sucks too, Phil, is that if the national media people don't vote him in, then he's not going to be an all-star. And then next year, he's going to be in year four, and they're going to be like, well, he's never been able to make an all-star team in that little market in Minnesota, so maybe he's got to demand a trade. And it's like, you had the ability to put him in the all-star game. He has better numbers. He has better numbers. And, like, this is really fun. If you go to ESPN, the app, and you go to NBA, and you go to stats, which is right next to schedule and standings, and you go filter stats, you can't even find Kawhi in there. Because at the bottom in the small text, it said players have to have played 70% of their games. Well, Kawhi hasn't done that. Paul George has missed 36% of their games. So, I don't know. Like, I saw some national people that cover the league from 30,000 feet that had, like, Draymond Green on their all-star ballots. And it's like, if this is a legacy thing, that's fine. I guess, you know, we can't control that. I think fan voting is stupid because it affects contracts. It affects, you know, deals, it affects all this stuff. And then when it doesn't happen for these small market guys, they just use it to be like, oh, that guy, he's got to get to LA, he's got to get to New York. And it's like, dude, you could have changed that for us. You could have helped us.
Well, the all NBA stuff too, like Karl Anthony Towns making third team all NBA. Mm-hmm. It's like beat writers, some of the beat writers are voting on that. It's like, mm-hmm. So wait a second, I like John Krasinski, and he's been public about this. It's weird.
Yeah, and John is been great with that.
If I vote for you, you get like it triggers like a financial windfall for you or not. Like, I don't want to be responsible for that. But just on the all-star front, all right, just speaking to any of the stakeholders here, I get that Kawhi Leonard is one of the great players of the last 10 or 15 years. He's also a boring cyborg that should not be displayed in an all-star game. Who do you want to watch run around and have fun? Who do you want to elevate as the face of your league? Boring ass load management Kawhi Leonard or Anthony Edwards, the Ant-Man? Let's get Ant out there trying to posterize Giannis. You know, like, wouldn't that be fun? Just watch him running around, big smile on his face, jacking threes, trying to posterize guys.
And this is where I feel like I'm literally yelling into a tunnel that is just me in it, because it's like, yeah, don't you think, like, if I'm the NBA, wouldn't I also be like campaigning to get this kid in there for every reason you just said? Last year, and people take all-star stuff seriously. Again, it's listed on your basketball reference page. It's listed when you make the Hall of Fame. It's like 12-time all-star Phil Mackey. So this stuff clearly matters. But last year, Jimmy Butler made it, and I think he played 2 minutes in the all-star game. He basically just kept his warm-ups on and was like, I'm going to get this all-star badge for future endorsement deals and contracts and make a bunch of money, but I'm not actually going to play. And it's like, this is an exhibition game. This is for the fans. Name me. If I covered the Alaska Polar Bears for football, like, I'd be like, name me 10 NBA players I'd rather see in the All-Star game than Anthony Edwards, the kid who just dunks it from everywhere and is clearly going to try hard in a game that no one tries hard. So that's my rant. We'll find out next Thursday. Like I said, incentives for him, but it'll also be just, it'll be a cool moment, and I don't think he's going to make it. But I've struggled with some of these legacy guys. I mean, this season more than ever has been just every star player misses a ton of games. And some of that's out of your control. I mean, you see guys roll their ankles and stuff. That's real. But I don't know, man. We've seen Ant and the injuries he's sustained and, you know, in games and stuff. And he just continues to strap it on and come out and play. And I think that's important. And it's weird that from a national level, it's not important to those people. Because I've always just thought the best ability sometimes is availability. And him playing, what's their record if he's missed 25 games? Can you imagine? No. They're probably like 10-40 or something stupid. So
just, I think the energy, you can just kind of lean on him to, all right, we can't score points right now. So can you just please get to the rim and shoot threes? I know the analytics would show that he still has a lot of work to do from an efficiency standpoint and defense and stuff, but just like heartbeat of the team. Let me ask you this too. It's It's the episodic D'Lo question of the day here.
We need to spend...
we need like a sounder for that or something. So the trade deadline's coming up. We're within a couple weeks of the trade deadline, and we have talked at length on this show about just the decisions they have to make with guys that are going to be free agents, and they have a $30 million expiring contract as a trade chip to get assets back. It's about asset management. If they let D'Lo continue forward through the end of the season, $30 million comes off their books, but they don't recoup $30 million in cap space because they're over the cap. So we've gone over all this stuff. You can listen to previous episodes. My question to you is, do you think they would, based on how well he has played recently, as a D'Lo doubter myself, I give him full credit. This is the best basketball I think he's played since they traded for him 3 or 4 years ago. In fact, if you want to take this back, like hit the first 15 or so games of the season for him, like the first 13, 15 games, is maybe the worst stretch he's ever played in a Timberwolves uniform. Couldn't make a three, just couldn't connect with Gobert, and some of it was just like figuring out what role he has. But if you look at his last 34 games since that bad clunky start, going back to like late November, he's averaging 19 points, 6.5 assists. He's shooting 41% from three-point range on 7 attempts per game. So, like, it's volume three-point shooting, and he's shooting 41%, and he's also shooting 50% from the field overall. He's been a highly efficient offensive player over the last, like, 2.5 months. Do I think there's still a 10-game bad D'Lo stretch in there? Yeah. Like, traditionally, he tends to have those where he just kind of, like, shoots 3 for 15 every night. But my long-winded question to you, Kyle, is knowing how well he's been playing – and knowing how well I think him and Ant have kind of gelled on this thing, we're like, all right, yeah, I'll defer to Ant. I'll play off the ball, and we can both work it out as the alphas of the backcourt. Would they run the risk of just holding on to him because of how well he's playing now and just deal with the ramifications in June or July?
I think this might not be popular. I don't think there's any way they can trade him now. I don't. And I was on the record a couple weeks ago saying not even what I would do, just I felt pretty confident they would trade him. To add on to your stuff, Alan Horton had this, but D'Lo's shooting 50.7%, 36 of 71 from three over the last 10 games, which kind of coincides with, I know that's 10 games, but that whole 9-4 record since that Pistons loss. And he has three or more made threes in a career best 6 straight games. I think the number one subplot that's been under discussed is the chemistry between him and Ant this last month or so. It looks like a NBA elite backcourt. Some deficiencies still defensively, sure. But listen, there really are no teams in the league right now that are throwing out 5-plus offensive players and simultaneously defensive players. That's why you have Rudy Gobert. That's why you have Jaden McDaniels. D'Lo's flourishing kind of last 2, 3, 4 weeks has also coincided with Kyle Anderson just, you know, being on the ball more, allowing D'Lo to be more of a spot-up shooter. But again, I'm just telling you, not even what I want, just how would you be 25-25? And we just said these next 32 games are kind of all must win, and you can really skyrocket yourself and all this stuff, and then trade a player who's been really beneficial or contributed to your recent success. Like, you're not going to trade him for just straight, well, picks or draft capital, because then where's Jordan McLaughlin? That is my weekly, like, where is Jordan McLaughlin? He's still hurt. You can't just put more emphasis on Ant. You haven't really gotten anything out of Jalen Noel. They don't trust Wendell Moore yet. So I don't think we are literally less than two weeks from the trade deadline, February 9th. I know Zach Lowe mentioned this on his pod, but there has been way less stuff behind the scenes about them trying to move him. So I think they keep him. I think they run it through the rest of the season. And then they see this summer with his salary slot, sign and trade, that we can get something back and you can go on. Or do we try to hammer out a 2-3 year, you know, deal that keeps you here and keeps the slot open, and then we just, again, kick the can down the road is a bad phrase, but you can do that. You can just, we'll figure this out in June, or we'll figure this out in October or next February. Yeah. So you can't trade him right now. He's just been too good. He was huge in that Rockets game. Yeah, they lost, but his shooting, his playmaking, he's just been so steady, and he's been great alongside Ant deferring. It's been great. It's been a great, great, great month for him.
It is an interesting development for sure, but it's also like really convenient timing. This is like the time where you would completely lock it in and play your ass off, either A, because you have a contract extension or you have an open market to hit in a few months. Or it's B, just, you would do this just to like have some pride. If you know, if you're hearing trade rumors, you're like, screw that. Like, I'm not just a guy that you dump off the side. So, but the Wolves are benefiting from it. Whatever mm-hmm. the motivation is for him playing the best basketball probably of his career, it's a huge benefit to the Wolves.
Yeah, and again, if you do trade him, I'm not saying you can't, but if you do that move, you got to bring someone in that can then play and help out, because D'Angelo Russell has helped them win games these last couple of weeks. It's impossible to prove against that. So, I don't know. I just watched Kyle Lowry the other night just flop around all over the court.
You can't,
like,
yeah. No.
I was just like, dude, I don't know if I'm I'm not sure I'm interested in watching that dude do that. I'm not sure what kind of precedent that sets for a team that already complains a lot and yells when they drive and stuff. So, yeah, I think 2 weeks from now, if we do another Friday pod, I think D'Angelo Russell's still here. That doesn't mean it's going to go away. They got to figure it out. He is a free agent come July, but for now, he's playing too well that even if you think he's pulling one over on you and getting hot at the right time, well, he is getting hot at the right time for this team as well.
Yes. All right. That's I think that's a wrap on this episode today. We had little speculation
yeah.
in
okay.
there.
Yeah, yeah.
Some breaking news, some expectations, some math involved today.
The math
too.
Was my favorite part. Yeah. Also, I just want to bring this up because we talked about it on here as well. You watched that Pelicans game, right?
Oh yeah.
I'm today's the last day I'll fluff my feathers. Had a little reporting, I'm done with that, back to memes, back to Jaden propaganda. But did you see when Willie Green got kicked out of the game?
Yeah.
And how stoked the fans and players were?
Yeah.
Remember when I said Chris Finch needs to get tossed? Thought that was a cool moment because it.
Yeah.
Nothing makes me feel better, Phil, than when I say something and it's proven right. Because as the commenters know, I say a lot of dumb stuff and it gets proven wrong. But getting tossed every once in a while when your team's on the bad side of a bad whistle helps. It's a good idea.
I actually, you know, I do just to dive into the comment section for one here real quick, because I do have it open from our last episode on the YouTube comments. DFW Mentor chimes in and says, it seems like Kyle and Phil have decided this season has led them to wanting Finch out just months after talking him up for coach of the year. Just my opinion, but I don't blame Finch for the team's shortcomings. Kat is to blame more than Finch. You and I were kind of texting about this the other day. Neither one of us, especially you, like you're like firmly like Finch camp. Even in my criticism on the last episode, I said, I am not calling for his head, mm-hmm. but here are some things that worry me about his coaching yeah. so far and the shape of it. There is a nuanced gray area where you can criticize someone, even hammer them, but also not call for their head and think that they should be fired. But if he doesn't fix some of these things, there's guys like Quinn Snyder that mm-hmm. have coached Rudy Gobert before that you shouldn't hesitate to have a conversation with. So I'd like to see Finch become less of an offensive coordinator and more of an all-encompassing, I run the show. Like, why is his vision not coming to fruition on a more nightly basis? Why are there effort issues? Why are there lapses in judgment all the time? Like, those are, to me, healthy and fair criticisms without me putting a pitchfork, you know, in the guy wanting him out. So there is a delineation there.
Run that back and listen to what Phil just said. Because if Phil's taught me nothing else, it's like, you can be, like, anyone listening to this, have you been critical of your child? Like, did that mean you automatically put them up for adoption? Or, like, have you been critical of a spouse? Like, doesn't mean you have to get a divorce. I think Finch had some moments this season, while there were other circumstances, losing players, injuries, whatever, that it was right to criticize him. But I also, that's why these teams don't fire a guy just after a 4-game losing streak, because I think Finch is a really good coach. And what you and I were texting about is, I think everything we said on the last pod was accurate. But I also think it's cool, because you brought up the Lakers doc that we both watched about Phil Jackson and Kobe and all that stuff. Anthony Edwards loves Chris Finch, like really loves, and it sounds mm-hmm. like behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, whatever, like Finch coaches him really hard. And for a kid who did enter the league with some questions about if he loves the game or has a work ethic, things that seemed like kind of pot shots at the time, but Anthony Edwards has become a guy who is a gym rat, continuously gets better. Some of that is involved in coaching. Some of that involved in Finch just pushing him harder than maybe he pushes other guys. So I think you can be critical of Finch because he's done some weird things. I think I can still want him to get ejected at some point because I think that's a really smart move. But also say, you know, his relationship with Ant might, I don't know, man, if Ant's your best player, the relationship with the coach is like number one thing or one of the most important
yes.
things. So
everything kind of falls in mm-hmm. around that 100%.
Yep. Yep.
So if you're quarterback yep. and your coach in the NFL, everything falls in after that.
And that's important. So Finch might mess up another timeout or a challenge this weekend and will be critical, but I think he's the guy to see them through this when it's all said and done. And again, his relationship with a potential all-star, a potential franchise player is very, very meaningful. So, yeah.
But if they lose 5 games in a row, I'm coming on this podcast. I'm calling for heads. All right. That's a wrap on this Friday episode of Flagrant Howls. Enjoy your Wolves viewing over the weekend here. He's Kyle. I'm Phil. This is your favorite Timberwolves lifestyle podcast.